This is Steve Kraske. This year marks the 20th anniversary of KCUR's Up to Date. 20 years is a long time to host and produce a daily talk show, and our team couldn't do it without KCUR's strong listener support. As a nonprofit news station, KCUR relies on individual donations to make this show. I hope you'll join me in celebrating 20 years of Up to Date by donating today at kcur.org/support. This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Artist Steve Snell can tell you all about the Missouri River, and he can do it from firsthand experience. Snell spent the summer paddling all 2,341 miles of it from the headwaters at Three Forks, Montana, all the way to St. Louis. As Julie Deneche tells us in her story about Steve at KCUR.org, he encountered rough weather, angry cows, swarms of mosquitoes, and hard paddling along the way. Steve Snell took a sabbatical from his job as a professor of art at the Kansas City Art Institute to make this voyage, and he joins us now here in the studio. Steve, welcome, and you made it. You're in one piece. Well, help me with this. You encountered angry cows. I guess I haven't lived long enough, Steve, because I've never come across an angry cow that I'm aware of. How do you know a cow is angry?
Well, they come up to you while you're sleeping in your tent and start snorting and grunting. And,
oh, really?
You know, even moving the tent a little bit.
Really? Because you're on their turf, I imagine.
I think I was where they wanted to go to sleep that night.
How rude of you to think about that, right? Mm-hmm. Why did you want to do this, paddle all 2,341 miles of the Missouri River?
It just sounded like a good idea.
Huh.
I know I moved here 7 years ago, a little bit over that, I guess, now, and when I got to Kansas City, the first thing that struck me was the river. And that's what got me into paddling and exploring this area. And I just kind of fell in love with it after that.
That's neat. You moved to Kansas City, as you said, 7 years ago. What fascinates you the most about this river?
Well, it's so diverse. I mean, even in the area close to us, you know, it doesn't take long for the river to change quite a bit and for you to kind of get this feeling of being alone out there, even though you're quite close to quite a lot of people.
Yeah.
But you can kind of have it to yourself. And, you know, I'm just kind of drawn to the unknown in a way, and it's just full of unknowns and kind of rich experiences in that sense.
So when did you start, and when did you reach St. Louis?
I started June 2nd up in Three Forks, and I got to St. Louis on August 28th.
Wow. Is that about what you planned it to be, or were you just guessing?
I mean, it was a little bit of guesswork, but also planning, and I was about on time. At one point earlier in the journey, I was, like, thinking it would be closer to mid-September, and that was kind of the date I promised my wife I'd definitely be done by.
Huh.
But after getting off the lakes up in the Dakotas, it just went by really quick.
You know, I was struck by something. You told Julie Deneche of KCUR that you set out to create an updated portrait of the Missouri River and the mark that humans had made on it. But once you got going, Steve, and got on the river, your interest changed. How so?
Well, I don't know if they totally changed as much as they just kind of evolved. You know, the portrait is through my perspective and through my experience, and everybody's going to have a different one that might do the exact same journey, but it's never the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so I forget what your question was.
Was the human impact on the river what you thought it was going to be?
Yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's parts of the river that are you know, for example, up on Lake Sakakawea, I heard the pump jacks of the oil drilling before I even saw it, and they really line the lake for a good, at least half of that lake. It seems like you see the flares and the gas lines and all that.
Oh, that's interesting.
But it also didn't make it any, for me, it was still quite beautiful and remarkable of a landscape despite that clear intervention, that impact that we've had on the land. So I don't know, I'm a little bit kind of in between there.
Yeah. I'm visiting with artist Steve Snell, who just paddled the entire length of the Missouri River. Many of us have seen the river from somewhere in Kansas City, but tell us about the river as it winds through Montana, which most of us haven't seen, because you took a long time making your way through that part of the river, I gather because, what, it was so beautiful up there.
Oh, it was incredible. And from people that I had talked to, some of the advice I got was, don't rush Montana. because a lot of people want to start fast, you know, and make a lot of progress. But then you have a lot of time remaining after Montana, and people will look back and say, oh, gosh, I wish I didn't rush through that area so quickly. And
yeah.
So I intentionally took my time and paint every morning and drink hot coffee and warm breakfast. And
what's beautiful about it up there?
Well, it changes every day.
Hmm.
I mean, like the landscape that you go through in the morning might be completely different from the one in the afternoon. And it took about a month to get through Montana. And, you know, it still remains for me like part of the highlight of the trip.
I almost got the sense from talking to you before the show that you still miss being on the river, even though you've been back for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. I still dream about it at night.
Do you?
Yeah, I feel like my head's still on the river in some ways, both consciously and unconsciously, I guess.
Yeah. Tell me about a spot along the river that you'll never forget. Was there one place that you still sort of stands out to you and you think about more often than not?
I don't know if there's any one place that stands out as, you know, more often than any other. Mm-hmm. I kind of find my head like time traveling to various parts all over the river, but just especially the mornings, you know, waking up, you know, on a sandy beach, whether it's in North Dakota or in Missouri, those kind of memories will flood back and just the routine that you get kind of adjusted to.
Yeah. Oh, how did you decide what you were going to paint?
Well, I guess maybe that's where things evolved a little bit, you know. Like, I had these expectations of the updated portrait of the river. Like, I wanted to paint certain geological features that Carl Bodmer painted in, like, the 1830s, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when I hit some of those spots, like in the Missouri Breaks, I was dealing with 45 mile an hour wind gusts and rain. And,
wow.
You know, I'm like, I'm not getting out of the boat right now to make a painting. I'm just trying to stay upright. And so my painting subjects were mostly determined by the weather and where I landed in terms of my camps.
Huh.
And then occasionally, if, you know, time allowed, I would be able to pull over specifically to make a painting. But it was mostly based off of, you know, where I was. And where I stopped.
And Steve, I was wondering, we talked in our first segment about the mosquitoes. Tell me about them. How bad could it get?
You know, surprisingly, the mosquitoes weren't as bad as I thought they'd be overall.
Oh, is that right?
Overall.
Because Lewis and Clark were always complaining
about
it.
But there were a few places in particular where they were worse than I've ever experienced in my
whole
life.
What was that like?
Miserable.
Really?
The confluence with the Yellowstone River is one spot where I got out of my canoe to fly a drone for a minute. I just wanted to see what it looked like from above. It seemed like an important place. And within 30 seconds, I had about 50 mosquitoes on me. And
no kidding.
Got back in the boat and they came with me. And I'm just trying to take care of that. And that was kind of the life for the next couple of days in the Williston, North Dakota area. The mosquitoes were pretty horrendous.
Huh. You know, you paint with watercolors, and I'm wondering why watercolors instead of oil on a trip like this.
Well, it's pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm surrounded by water. I can literally just dip my brush in the river and fill a jar. But also, I was inspired by the watercolors of an artist named Carl Bodmer that went up the river in 1831.
Huh.
And documented what the river looked like at that time. And so those really blew me away when I found them in a book at the library, and that's just didn't really overthink it. I'm like, I'm going to make watercolors. That's what I do.
How did you ensure that none of these completed paintings wound up getting wet?
Some of them did get wet.
Did they?
Yeah, I mean, protecting the paper was a difficult challenge at times. I had wave crash in the boat once when going through some rapids. And that ruined about 45, 60 sheets of paper. But it didn't really ruin it. I just used them anyway. It just becomes part of the process. But I had a watertight case for all my camera gear, and finished paintings could go in there. And
yeah.
Then when I'd get to a small town, I could mail home the finished work. So I didn't always have everything with me.
You know, people around here don't associate rapids with the Missouri River. Are there rapids when you get up north and out west?
There are. They're not at the class where you need to have like a whitewater raft or special kayak or canoe to handle them, but you need to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And there was definitely a few moments where, you know, it can go from this is fun to, wow, I just want to stay upright right now, you know. And I'm glad that people gave me a heads up to where those places were so I could at least pay attention and not be caught off surprise too much.
How harrowing were those rapids?
Oh, I wouldn't say they were harrowing.
Yeah, okay.
They just require you to pay attention and control your boat so that you don't hit a rock.
Mm-hmm. Could anybody do something like this? I mean, come down the Missouri River. What do you need to do it?
I think
it sounds like such a neat thing to do.
Yeah, I think ultimately you need some time and maybe some determination, but you don't need to be an expert paddler by any means. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people that do this have never been in a canoe before they even get to Montana, and they learn along the way. And I'm personally not an expert paddler. I learned really when I got to Kansas City mm-hmm. and on the river, and you know, trying to do it safely, wearing a life jacket, and kind of know what you're doing to some degree. But just being careful and paying attention and respecting the river.
Are there plenty of places to stay along the way?
There's plenty of places. I mean, mm-hmm. some places have more or better camping than others. Mm-hmm. But I never couldn't find a place to sleep. And I very rarely knew where I was going to stay the day I was waking up. You know, it's always an unknown, like, where am I going to camp tonight? I'll have to figure that out when the time comes.
You were saying before that one skill that you picked up along the way was how to read the river and stay in the main channel. And in some places, that's hard to figure out because the river is so wide. Why was it important to figure that out?
Well, you know, down here, the Army Corps has signage which will show where the channel is, you know, and everything's – that's not a problem. But up north, it's wide still, and it can be deceiving as to how deep it is. And if you're not paying attention, you can bottom out your boat and be in the middle of the river, you know, hitting sand or rock or gravel.
Right.
And then you have to drag it to the channel because it's a series of braids, right? And being able to read where the channel is, it kind of heightens your perception mm-hmm. after you've been on the river long enough. I always follow the bubbles. Follow the ripples. But you can also predict it based off of, like, where a cut bank is. Okay, well, the channel's probably cutting away mm-hmm. at that side of the river, but not always. So watch the bubbles.
Where do the bubbles come from?
Oh, I don't know. It's just maybe the way you know, if there's like a little bit of a riffle, like just oxygen accumulates, but then it's going to follow the swiftest water probably. So then that's where the channel is.
So what's going to happen to the paintings, to the video that you took? What are your plans for all this going forward?
Well, I want to build an exhibition, and my dream is to try and get it shown in every state that aligns the river.
Oh, cool.
If I can get it back to Montana, that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And from talking to people up there all along the way, I would, you know, share my work with strangers that I'd meet at camps or at boat ramps. And just to everyone was kind of encouraging to bring it back here. You know, we want to see what the river looks like down there, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one part of this project. And I'll be applying for shows throughout the fall and hopefully next spring and next year, I'll be able to have a couple shows and definitely one here in Kansas City.
Have you completed the videos? Are those all edited the way you want them to be?
No, the videos, I'm just starting. Like mm-hmm. literally, like last night, I'm for the first time looking through some of this footage that I recorded every day. And my concept going into it, because I'm a painter and I also work in video, was to try and have it both ways. And so I'm making a show. Imagine like a painting show like Bob Ross, but in an adventure survival mode.
Uh-huh.
So it'll be
more exciting than Bob Ross, you hope.
Well, I think Bob Ross can be pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I'm clearly no Bob Ross either. We'll see what it becomes. But each episode would take place on a different part of the river, you know, from Montana down to St. Louis. And then collectively, you know, build a portrait of the river is my concept.
And when do you think people around here will be able to see it?
Next spring. I'll be able to premiere the first episode next spring, and I'll shortly have them online. I really want them to be accessible to people, and it's a way for people to get to know their river and be able to see it and experience it in that way.
We're online.
YouTube, most likely.
YouTube,
yeah.
Okay. Steve, how exhausting was this trip? How physically taxing was it?
Well, it was physically taxing at different times, more mm-hmm. so than others.
Yeah.
I feel like by the end, I wasn't physically exhausted.
But you're going with the water coming down, right?
After Sioux City, Iowa, it gets a lot easier.
Because the flow is so strong?
Yeah, you can sit in your boat and go 3 miles an hour and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, on the lakes, if you're not paddling, you're not going anywhere. And if you're not paddling, you might even be going backwards because you're often dealing with headwinds.
Huh.
And that there was definitely some very tiring days where, you know, you're putting in full energy for 10, 12, up to 14 hours a day in a boat and going like 1 mile an hour.
Mm. The wind is obviously the thing you're, the weather factor you're most concerned about.
Wind, I've never cared more about the wind than I did this past summer.
Every day, where's the wind?
Every day that I would check my forecasts and I want to know what's the wind forecasted to be, where is it coming from, what are the gusts going to be up to, because that really determines how far can I get and can I even get on the water safely? Because when the wind blows, especially up on the big lakes, there's days where you just need to wait it out and it'd be irresponsible to get on the water.
Could you even connect somehow with some communications outlet to figure out what the weather was?
Yeah. I mean, whenever there was a cell phone reception, I would be checking my apps to, see what the wind was. But oftentimes that there is none.
Yeah.
So I had a little Garmin inReach that I had a subscription to, get weather reports, and I check that regularly.
All the time. Well, to do this trip, you had to leave your wife and your 2.5-year-old son.
Correct.
How tricky was that part of this?
Well, that was for me the hardest part about it.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much like a physical thing as much as like an emotional,
mm-hmm.
Being away at such a really important and I'm personally fun time to be around a 2.5-year-old was challenging, but they were just really supportive of this project from the beginning. And, I'm glad to be home with them now.
I bet. You said that along the way you made a lot of friends on this trip, and that surprised me because I sort of think of the river up north and out west as being particularly sort of deserted, but you're saying you still met people along the way.
Yeah. And that for me, that was a big surprise too. There's, stretches of days where you won't see a single person. And then you roll into a boat ramp or a town or a marina and you start to meet people and they want to know about your story. And generally, people want to help and they want to be a part of it. And the generosity of strangers throughout the entire river really blew me away and I feel so grateful for.
They invited you into their homes sometimes.
Into their homes. Put me up for free in cabins, fed, like most people were really into feeding me as much as possible. They want to make sure I get the calories because it's one of those things out there. You're just using so much energy all day, every day that it's hard to get enough. And so people want to feed you, especially it seems like.
How did you manage the food? How do you do that on a long voyage like this?
I spent some time preparing my food before, but not everybody does. I personally bought a food dehydrator and made myself the kind of food that I like to eat, rice and vegetables with a protein. And I prepackaged all those. And then at the end of the day, all I had to do was boil water and throw my food in there. And 10 minutes later, I had a good meal.
But that must have been quite a heap of food in your canoe as you came down when you started out to begin with.
Oh, yeah. I always carried way more than I needed, too. I could carry up to a month's worth of food and up to a week's worth of water at any one time in my boat. So I had a heap of food for sure, but that's where the food dehydration was helpful because it was, I could pack a lot in there and it'd be relatively light.
Yeah.
And then I had care packages sent occasionally where kind of resupply that my wife would send to a post office.
How often were you able to talk to her?
We messaged every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I had the little satellite responder for that she could track. And I could, let her know I'm setting up camp or I'm getting on the water. So I was always able to check in, and she knew I was safe out there.
Some of these folks describe themselves that you met along the river as river angels. What are river angels, Steve?
Well, river angels are people that help out paddlers, especially. It seems like, I think they'll help out anybody on the river, but there's a network of river angels up and down river that look out for people like me and, are there to maybe give you a ride around a dam. Because there's, I think, 15 of them.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And so some of them are really not feasible for you to walk on your own. So you call a river angel and they'll help you out. Or might be able to take you into town to resupply or get a shower or do laundry. And there's more out there than you would know. And some I knew about before I got there. And others were just strangers that I met at a boat ramp. And within, 30 seconds, they're offering to take into town or even stay the night if you need a place to stay.
How did you connect with them?
What do you mean?
How did you find them?
Oh, the River Angels. Well, there's a network that I kind of became a part of online through Facebook, Missouri River Paddlers Group.
Right.
And there's a guy named Robin out of Waverly, Missouri, that actually sent me a document with just a list of names and phone numbers and river miles. And when I got to the dams, I kind of cold call these numbers and introduce myself. And sure enough, the person on the other end would be like, "I'll be there."
Okay.
You know, and it was amazing. Yeah, so, and then there's another person out of Livingston, Montana, that really helps kind of maintain that group and offers a lot of advice for paddlers like me.
And what an important thing to have, I imagine, at certain times along a trip like this.
Oh, it makes it so much more accessible. To plan a trip like this takes a lot of time, and having a network like that and support of you is just incredibly helpful.
You know, Steve, I'm wondering about what was the end of your journey like when you finally got back to St. Louis and then over to Kansas City? What was the end like?
Oh, they ended much like it started, in rain, mm-hmm. and thunderstorms.
Oh, is that right?
Were
people waiting for you?
Well, they got there about 30 minutes after I was waiting for them in the thunderstorm.
But
they had traffic to contend with.
Yeah.
But I made it to the confluence with the Mississippi River, and my goal was then to try and make it to the arch. It just seemed like it would be a pretty epic photograph, but the river and the weather was telling me otherwise. As soon as I got in the Mississippi, I could see the thunderheads rolling in, and I got to the chain of rocks, which is a little rapids that you have to portage around.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I knew, like, this isn't a good idea. This is where I stop.
If you could paddle the Ogallala Aquifer, would you paddle it if it wasn't underground? Would that be something you'd want to do?
Oh, yeah.
I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, no, it's local.
Because my pitchers are giving me a hard time about focusing on the Ogallala. We talk about it here sometimes.
Sure. No, I'm interested in the Ogallala Aquifer as well. And, and prior to moving to Kansas City, that's where I got my water.
Yeah.
So, I'd be interested.
Well, what's your next adventure? Have you thought about where you want to go next year?
I don't know where. I feel like I've got enough content creatively for a couple years based off of the last few months. But I also know I'm not done with paddling or the river or other rivers. I mean, I got a taste of the Mississippi.
Do you want to do the Mississippi?
Someday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a more dangerous river than the Missouri.
I don't know about that. It's a different type of danger.
Mm-hmm.
You have to contend with locks and more barge traffic. I think that's a ways out. I'm mostly interested in places where I live, and I don't live on the Mississippi, so to me it's a little bit distant still. But I love the Missouri River. I'm sure I'll be back on it.
You have said, speaking of your love for the river, that you think more people are in these parts should be checking it out. What do you mean? What do you think more of us should consider here?
Oh, I think it's one of the most interesting things about where we live.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you go out there, one of the things that I love about it is you almost have it to yourself. And that's a really special feeling to be floating, down the riverfront in a city of, I don't know how many people live here, but it seems like a million or so.
And, yeah.
And
it was more than that.
Yeah. And you got it all to yourself, and that feels special. And it can feel quite natural, actually, even though it is.
There's been this sort of idea around Kansas City for so many years that we've ignored the river, that we really don't pay that much attention to it. I think that's changing now a little bit with the new stadium being built down there and new apartments being built on the riverfront. But it's been taking us a long time to begin to embrace it again. And I imagine you think this change, this city looking at the river more closely, is a good thing for us to be doing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're a river town. Mm-hmm. The river is the reason I think we're probably here.
Mm-hmm.
And going up and down the river, it's interesting to see how other cities have a relationship to the river in comparison to what I'm used to here. And I think there's definitely more opportunity for us, and I think appreciation for it. And there's also, people out there right now that do. And it's not hard to engage with the river. There's definitely resources and opportunities out there here in Kansas
City. I was going to say, you can rent canoes, you can rent kayaks and do all kinds of stuff to get out there if you want to do it, right?
Yeah, KC Kayak and Canoe. That was the first experience I had on the river, was renting at Caw Point and, just having a few-hour float down to the boat ramp on the other side of the riverfront. And you can also paddle up the Kansas River. Is a great river to paddle. Mm-hmm. Friends of the Caw do some wonderful things with
that.
And
we've talked about that here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you said that it sounds like you made the right decision to make this trip because you've called it a top five experience in your life.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't really know how to talk about it in a really succinct way, other than it was just very meaningful for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel so appreciative of the time and experience that I've had out there.
The solitude, how much did you embrace that?
Oh, I love solitude. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can be a social person, but I can also hole up pretty well and be content. And this had a little bit of both, but quite a bit of solitude as well.
Would you do it again?
I don't know if I would ever do the whole river, like, contiguously. I would love to go back, though, and do certain sections again. Mm-hmm. It's just, honestly, I don't know if I want to go right back into, like, Lake Oahe right now, or these lakes that can take, you know, I did them usually in about 10 to 12 days, but they can take longer than that, and they're tough.
And again, if someone's thinking about this, Steve, they should think about what if they want to prepare for a journey like this?
Well, I think they should think about what they're getting into and try and prepare and as responsibly as they can to do it safely. But also I would encourage people to, look at the river and not fear it, but respect it and just appreciate it, because there's just a lot to appreciate here, even in Missouri. I mean, floating around this area is quite a lot of fun.
What caught you unawares? What caught you something that was unexpected in this journey as you made your way along?
The cows were unexpected.
The cows.
I didn't realize.
We're back to the cows again.
Going back to the cows. I mean, that was like my nemesis for like North Dakota, South Dakota, and part of Montana. It's like every day I get out of the boat and trying to find my camp spot, and I'm looking for cow patties. How fresh are they?
Oh,
you know,
really?
Am I going to get a good night's sleep tonight, or am I going to have
some
neighbors?
Yeah. Wake you up?
Yeah.
Would they actually come up and nuzzle you and say, hey, get the heck out of here?
Just that one time. But otherwise, I had pretty good luck. I avoided them.
Yeah.
I mean, some people don't care about cows. I just didn't grow up around them, and I don't trust them.
Well, Steve Snell, so glad you made it back in one piece. Thanks for sharing your journey with us. And we can watch for the vids on YouTube at some point here,
yeah,
it sounds like.
Eventually on YouTube, and then on my website, I'll be posting them as well. And Instagram, I have a bunch of photos of the journey as well.
What is your website?
It's www.steve-snell.com.
Thanks again for coming in.
Thanks
so
for
good
having
to
me.
Visit
I
with
enjoyed
you.
The conversation.
Up to Date is a production of KCUR 89.3. Our theme music was composed by the great Bobby Watson. The program is produced by Danny Alexander, Zach Wilson, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Reginald David. Our engineer is Paul Nakatura. I'm Steve Kraske. Thanks for listening.